Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to The Front Three. My name is Adam Boltwood. Joining me, as always, is the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, not bad. And, of course, the stat man himself, Dave O'Brien.
Good evening, lads.
Yeah, back this week, Dave. Welcome back.
Turn of the King, eh?
How was it last week, eh? Turn of the King. Are you LeBron James?
I wish, mate. I wish.
We didn't actually explain where you were last week, Dave, so I don't know if you wanted to explain
to
the elaborate
people. On it.
Yeah, maybe just...
Yeah, explain what's more important to you, football or love?
They might be curious.
Sorry lads. I had to make the call, didn't I? I had to go on a date. I apologise to all the listeners. And I'll make up to it in top stats this week.
That's Dave, I hope you're sending all the listeners flowers.
And bloody... Yeah, I am, mate. I am. Special. I'm going to do it.
Well, there you go. Anyway, welcome to episode 9, everyone. Thank you once again for listening to The Front Three. If you are listening via iTunes on the podcast app, please rate the podcast from 1 to 5 and maybe even leave a little review if you're feeling generous. You know, that would be quite nice. As always, you can let us know what you think of the podcast, leave suggestions or ask us questions on Twitter at The Front Three, using the number 3, not the word. The tweet of the week this week has to go to Matt Devine, who said, "I love the way your names spell LAD, lad," which perfectly sums up the podcast.
Huh? If we had a guy called Paul on it, we could be the LAPD.
Oh,
yeah, well, you know, I'm not quite sure what to say to that, to be honest.
That means Los Angeles Police Department, which means it's way better than lad.
Oh, yes, of
course. Which basically is a pseudonym for prick.
Okay, well, you know, it can mean many things, you know.
Okay, which is Paul, Ricky, Ian, Carl and Chris. Who also do a football podcast, by the way.
Oh,
yeah. Do they now, rivals?
They don't. I was just making up. Yeah.
So this week, we are mainly going to be answering your questions. Been inundated with questions. Put the tweet
really
out there.
Really were, weren't we? My phone was boiled.
I know. I've never felt so popular in my entire life. But the first question I thought would be a good one to deal with would be the team of the season 2015, posed to us by Arteta Assist. Not Premier League team, not La Liga team, all of them together. So let's see how easy it is to get through this. So who is the best goalkeeper in the world? We're probably mainly looking at Europe, to be honest. Last season.
Should we put some... Do you want some candidates? Or
yes,
do you just want straight out our number one guy?
I'd like some candidates. I think Neuer, De Gea.
Neuer, De Gea.
Maybe it's just those two.
I'm going to give a shout out to Jan Sommer. He's been absolutely brilliant for Borussia Mönchengladbach in the Bundesliga. So I reckon, definitely worth a mention.
Well, Dave, who would you vote for then?
I'd definitely vote for David De Gea, though. I think he's just been phenomenal. You know, he's won us games. He beat, you know, pretty much won us the game at Liverpool. You know, won us the game at home against Liverpool, against Arsenal, home and away. He's just been phenomenal. The amount of points that he's probably won Man United has been insane. I reckon it's about the 30-point mark, which for a goalkeeper is a bit of a joke. But yeah, definitely David De Gea for me. Other mentions, I think the two Barcelona goalkeepers are worth a mention as well. Probably Ter Stegen for his Champions League performance, and then Claudio Bravo having a, you know, brilliant clean sheet record in the league this season. I think they're definitely both worth a mention. I reckon they'd only compete though if they were, you know, if one of them was playing in all competitions. But obviously that's not the Barcelona way. So I'm going to go with De Gea.
There was a big fuss over Neuer last year. What's made the goalkeeper so different this season? Because it is, you know, that David De Gea and Neuer are two quite different goalkeepers, aren't they?
I'd say so. Yeah, obviously Neuer's more of his, you know, keeper sweeper, comes off his line, you know, he sort of dominates the play with the ball, similar to De Gea in a way. De Gea's very, very good with his feet, but I think De Gea's, you know, more of the stays on his line, makes the reaction saves, makes the big saves when it counts. I think Manuel Neuer is very intimidating, as a goalkeeper coming off, and you know, one on one, Neuer's obviously I think better than De Gea, but they've got different strengths, and I both think they're absolutely wonderful keepers.
I'm a slight disadvantage because I mainly watch the Premier League, so obviously I'm inclined to say David De Gea, but I mean, what's your vote, Lawrence? De Gea, let's go for De Gea.
You know what? Yeah, let's go for De Gea.
Yeah,
whatever. He's going to go young. And,
what about,
and I think he deserves credit for what he did at United this season.
So if we're talking centre-backs next, we're looking at the likes of John Terry, played every single game, every single minute for Chelsea, the champions last season. Gerard Piqué, another fantastic centre-back last season. Any other sort of standout players?
Can we...
It's hard.
With my team... I've sort of gone a little bit different where I think Chiellini massively deserved a mention for his performance in the Champions League and Serie A. But I think he's probably, if we could play him at left-back, he probably hasn't played left-back this season. He's probably going to get in there. But I'd definitely say Javier Mascherano, one of the best centre-halves this season. I think Piqué and Mascherano have just won this hands down. They were absolutely phenomenal this year. So, so good. Mascherano in that final had a dodgy opening 3 minutes, changed his boots and was brilliant. I think, you know, he's a player that's evolved, obviously a deep-line player at Liverpool in midfield, and now he's a centre-half. He's just brilliant. He complements Piqué fantastically, and I think Gerard Piqué again, top season. Best. I think Gerard Piqué's the best, and then Mascherano second for me.
But correct me if I'm wrong, are we going to go for someone like Dani Alves at right-back?
Hold on, guys. Are we playing a traditional 4-4-2 here, or are we doing the thing of the season where we go three at the back?
I think we should go 4-3-3. I think we could complement a lot of players in that system.
Come on, Dave. You've obviously thought about this. Come on.
Yeah, but give us your
back four.
So my back four, De Gea, and then we've got Alves on the right, then Mascherano, Piqué in the middle. Yeah. And then I just think Chiellini's got to be in my team, so I put him at left back. But then, arguable, you know, good mentions. Marcelo's been phenomenal this year. Jordi Alba, Bernat, David Alba was phenomenal the first half of the year, but obviously got injured and dropped out. He probably would have been definitely in the team. But my back four then, Alves, Mascherano, Piqué and Chiellini.
I can almost agree on that, but I feel like you've got to swap out one of Piqué or Mascherano, because from my thinking, we're probably going to have Rakitic in there, we're probably going to have Messi in there, so you don't want to get too overwhelmed with Barcelona players.
So then drop Mascherano, put Piqué in, because Piqué's had what you'd describe as a standout leadership. The difference between Piqué last year and the difference between Piqué this year is no Puyol.
Ooh.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Who, if you're dropping one of them then, and you've got Chiellini at left-back, who's your other centre-back? John Terry?
Worth a mention.
You know what? Yeah, just from his performances this year, you know what? This has been a standout year for Terry. Let's put Terry in that back line.
Go on then. All right, Dave, who have you got as your three-man midfield?
My three-man midfield? So I have the main man, Sergio Busquets holding. He's just been absolutely fantastic. He's so good. In the Champions League final, it was so good when he got Vidal, but everyone was hating on him, like, dive in this, dive in that. But that piece of skill, go back and watch that piece of skill that he did on Vidal to get the yellow card for Vidal. Mm. It was brilliant. You know, he's completing more passes than any Barcelona player this season. He's really becoming the pivotal role, so for me, Busquets has got to be there holding. Going to go with my main man, Ivan Rakitic, on the right side, just because I love the guy. He's so good. He was so deserving of that Champions League final goal. You know, all the hard work he's done for Messi this season and Dani Alves covering them both. Oh, it's got to be him in there. And then my left central midfielder was really difficult. There's a number of names that you can get in there, like Kevin De Bruyne, Iniesta, you know, maybe because Eden Hazard might not go up front in this team. Maybe Eden Hazard sitting in, you know, maybe an attacking midfielder. You know, Marouane Fellaini's... No, I'm lying to you, sorry, guys. Cazorla's been brilliant. You know, there's so many top performances at central midfield. So, again, Yaya Toure, you know, has gone under the radar. He started poorly, obviously, but like the season before, he scored 20 goals. But he really picked it up, you know, in the sort of latter end of the season. James Rodriguez, another fantastic player playing for Real Madrid. I think we're just going to struggle at central midfield, really.
One thing we can definitely check off whilst we're here is there was another question that said something about... Has Mourinho, there you go, from Tack of Zach. He said, did Mourinho make a mistake by getting rid of Kevin De Bruyne? I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
But he's still doing well where he is.
Very well. Well enough to warrant getting in the team, Lawrence, I think?
I
If we're looking to balance it out,
it'd
then
be nice to have
yes.
a Bundesliga player in there, seeing as
which is weird to say because they've got Bayern in there and they've got a lot of good teams.
So if we're going for, I'm in on Rakitic. I like Rakitic. Rakitic, De Bruyne. We have Busquets. Is that too many Barcelona players we're putting in?
No, you can't put Busquets in there.
So they won the treble. They dominated European football.
It is true.
In there, maybe. What would be quite nice is if we said Pirlo, because obviously, you know, finishing off, or Xavi, you know, these two wonderful players finishing on a high Champions League final with both of them. But for me, it's got to be Busquets. Sorry, guys.
What do you make of Paul Pogba, who's been in a lot of Team of the Seasons, both Champions League and Serie A? Do you reckon he warrants a mention?
He warrants a mention, but the reason he warrants a mention is again because of the promising factor of Paul. You know, you'd say that there's been a lot of great things Paul Pogba's done. It doesn't make him a standout player, head and shoulders above the rest of the team.
So who are we going for then? We've got De Bruyne, Rakitic, and that last spot
goes
he could go to Busquets. Like Dave's saying, they did win the treble. They've dominated Europe. They've been the best team in the continent.
Then let's represent that and put Busquets in.
Busquets is in. All right, so up front, I assume we're having Messi on the right wing, Ronaldo on the left.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And up front, are we looking at someone like Suarez or Tevez?
Oh, I mean, Suarez is hard to overlook. And Neymar's not even in this team.
That's the difficulty, isn't it?
I'm probably going to have to go with Neymar. I'd probably stick Ronaldo through the middle and have Neymar Neymar on the left-hand side.
Yeah, I won't disagree with that. He's got more goals and assists than Suarez, who admittedly did miss a couple of months through the ban, but that was his own fault. So, yeah, I'm happy with Neymar.
So then, if that's the case, then who can we name a bench?
Well, how many subs do you get in a regular game?
The top two on there, the top three on there for me are three South Americans. It goes Tevez, Suarez, Sanchez.
Yeah, completely agree.
A midfielder to fill out this bench, give us some options.
Could you go like a Marquisio?
Yeah.
Very, very decent season. I think Cazorla, Robin, Hazard, maybe.
Let's go for Cazorla, shall we? Because he's not necessarily a wide, pacey midfielder. He's got a little bit more versatility to him. Gives us some depth. And maybe what about a couple of defenders to chuck on the bench as well? We said Mascherano. I think we'll put him in there.
Yeah, because he could play in central defensive midfield as well.
Yeah,
we've got to throw Ronaldo in there. He's been brilliant for Wolfsburg this season.
I like that.
That gives a bit more Bundesliga representation.
Yeah, represent.
Any league and representation in there.
You see, Lacazette could probably be your only, you know, player.
Yeah, but he's not going to get in over Suarez or Tevez on that bench. No. Listen, here's the 11. I'll give you 11 and the subs bench. So we've got De Gea in goal, Alves right back, Piqué and Terry partnering up at centre back, Chiellini left back, Busquets, Rakitic and De Bruyne as the midfield three. De Bruyne probably a little bit more attacking than the other two. And we've got Messi, Neymar and Ronaldo up front. Ronaldo through the middle. That is some team. And then on the bench, we've got Neuer, Mascherano, Naldo, Cazorla, Sanchez, Suarez and Tevez. I think that is a pretty good team. We did pretty well there, I think.
You know what? You could probably also name a whole team of people who are stepping out of the game this year.
Oh, yeah. I like that. Let's not do that now, but I think that is a good suggestion.
Name them in the comments below. I'd just love to know who you think.
Yeah, I like that. So there you go, Arteta assist. There's a team of the season from us. The next question is from John Baboon. This is probably one for Dave, to be honest. After a season under Louis van Gaal, what is the philosophy he has always talked about? What exactly is it?
This is going to go into a bit of a tactical mind boggle. I'm going to post a picture on Twitter that you're probably going to have to reference to because it is quite complicated what he talks about.
Where are we supposed to see this picture, Dave?
Just describe it to us.
Hold on, lads. Here we go. Get ready. Get ready for this to drop. There's the picture. So, Louis van Gaal, his biggest thing about football is having a number of lines. Having a number of lines on a pitch to give, you know, whoever's got the ball as many passing options as possible. So Louis van Gaal loves this thing of eight lines. There's seven on the diagram. The other line is a flexible line made up by one of the central midfielders, either dropping back or, you know, or pushing forward and creating another line. So that's his big philosophy. It's always having one of his players, the player on the ball, having two passing options and always being available to receive it and then give it. Very, very interesting. He, before moving to Man United and being the manager of Holland, he always liked a 4-3-3 with an attacking midfielder and sort of two central midfielders, you know, that triangle in midfield. He loves that for ball retention. You know, there's so many options there in the middle for one of those central midfielders. It's just fascinating. Offensively, we know what Louis van Gaal does. It's all about ball circulation. When you've got the ball, keep the ball. But it's about making the right decision at the right time to play that vertical pass, to play it to the attacker midfielder, to play it to one of the wingers. And it's all about that. It's all about keeping it going around, keep it circulating, retaining the ball and making the right decision at the right time. He likes to empower his players. It's a big thing for him, is making the players becoming leaders on the pitch, you know, decision makers. You know, the central midfielder taking really control of the game, the centre mid. You know, he likes that type of thing. He likes clever players. I think that's why we've seen some players drop out of Man United this season. You know, the likes of Shinji Kagawa. I think he's a very intelligent footballer, but is he smart enough to take on something, you know, Van Gaal's mentality? Javier Hernandez, another one that's potentially dropped out for this reason of not sort of learning the game, maybe not evolving to Van Gaal's standards, very, very high standards, what it is. Defensively, Van Gaal always likes to have three men back. You know, we've seen this for Man United this season. They've either had three centre-backs or there's been two centre-backs with a central midfielder sitting in front. And that's how he always likes to set up. Really interesting. Another part of his defensive philosophy is like about corners, about having a striker that drops deep, that creates space for players behind him. He talks about the big space. There's a cracking interview that I think a lad called Jed Wallace, I think he's called online. Jed Davis, I think he is. I'll shoot that interview afterwards if you want to like get more involved with this tactical thing. But I think that's about enough from me. What do you reckon, lads?
I think you answered that more than competently there for all of us.
I need the diagram. You definitely need like the diagram.
Let me just ask you another quick one, David. Another quick additional question because it's on the same kind of topic there. A guy called Luke Willock, he messaged me this question on Facebook and I keep forgetting to ask, so I need to remember to ask now. He asked... he wants to know why United struggled away from home last season and why United were better in the big games than they were against the, perhaps you'd say, smaller teams.
I think it's all about like ball retention, I think. I think, again, going back to this ball circulation stuff, Man United were really poor with the ball against the smaller teams. They dropped off United. They let the centre-backs have the ball. Players that, you know, weren't good on the ball, the likes of Smalling, the likes of Phil Jones, that have got... you know, push forward, then make a poor decision that's easily picked off on the counter-attack. I think we struggled with not having a proper defensive midfielder. Michael Carrick, obviously, when he played, was fantastic. We won like 72% of our games. When he didn't play, Man United won 35 or 37% of their games, a massive impact. And I think that's also to do with that, how I mentioned his philosophy before. Van Gaal always likes three coming back. Man United moved away from the three at the back, the traditional three at the back, the 3-5-2, the start of the season, because it wasn't getting the results. We didn't have enough width up the pitch, another problem that we had. We moved to this 4-3-3. And when we didn't have sort of Carrick sitting in front of the two centre-backs holding, we had issues there. And it's very easy to attack teams like that. It's very easy to break on them down the flanks. A quick change of play, you've got a man over on the other side. The likes of West Brom did that brilliantly. You know, there's other teams that have, you know, Everton did that brilliantly at home. And I think that was the problem. Poor ball retention and getting hit on the counter-attack. Being too open and not having, you know, these athletic players to get up and down. You know, massive space at right back was a big issue. Valencia, the amount of times someone, you know, there was space behind Valencia for a forward to move into was ridiculous. I think that's it's a combination of poor possession, poor positioning, and then getting hit on the break.
Well,
that's what I'm going to go with.
There you go, Luke Willock. Your question has been comprehensively answered there once again. Lawrence, let me come to you with this question.
No, sorry, mate. I don't want to be on the podcast anymore.
This is perfect for you. Bay Rito said, what are England's under-21 chances of going all the way, seeing as you were at the squad announcement the other week and you sort of, you know the players and you sort of, you know what's going on?
Very strong squad. I think when you start every tournament, you have to say... England have to say, look, we're going there to win it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's the end goal. And that's part of the problem here, is that actually we're looking for longer term development under England. They do have a great team. They have a great squad. They have a very talented front line, but I think there are better systems that are probably going to go to this tournament. And one of them is Denmark. You know, I've spoken to a number of journalists before. Kristen, who was on last week, who's extolling the virtues of this Denmark side, just the talent, just, you know, the fact that they seem to be a lot further ahead, or the dark horses ahead of everyone else, because other people, other journalists will probably be sleeping on them right now. And what I'm wondering about is, do England have the tactical nous to face up to these other guys? And that's it, really, is that, you know, England very, very often struggle to marry the tactics with the talent.
I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to see how they get on out there. But yeah, like you say, it's not all about the winning necessarily. It's just, it's going to be exciting to see them out there.
I still think one thing I definitely notice, that I still don't think we've nailed how to cover England as a team. Under 21s, any level. I don't think we've done it well enough. So it could just be better. Let's put it that way. And there's more of a conversation to be had than it's because they're not good enough. even more so when they lost them, and you know, then they almost lost to Slovenia but didn't.
Here's a sort of related question. Robert 593 said, "Why are England so boring to watch?" I thought the game against Slovenia last weekend was pretty entertaining.
Because they're playing within their means right now, and you know, I was asked earlier today what's progress for England after the last World Cup, and there have been elements of progress in there. You know, the fact you're able to bring Delph into that system is progress. The fact you're able to bring Townsend more consistent, the fact Sterling has been in there more consistently, the fact we have a more consistent back line, the fact that Joe Hart is less of a questionable goalkeeper now, they're all positives, but they're relative positives in comparison with other people, in comparison with Germany, in comparison with France, in comparison with Italy, Argentina, Brazil, all these other guys, that it's all relative. So England are making small steps whilst other people seem to be making great technical strides. Love a good woman cough in the background.
That's the old guy from there.
Is that Dave or Adam? I can't work it out.
That was me.
Okay.
Liam Gray was here, regular listener, regular question asker, said, "Thoughts on players being told not to showboat in games?" He's referring specifically to the Neymar incident from a couple of weeks ago. He said, "I think it's ridiculous. He's playing his game and enjoying himself. It's not disrespectful at all. Flair and skill are part of the game."
It's a cultural thing, isn't it?
What do you guys think about that whole thing?
It's a cultural thing. It's not, to him, it's not, well, I mean, it's technically, it's a little bit disrespectful. If he was doing that in basketball, that's the thing though, if he was doing that in basketball, would people say the same thing?
I don't know. I don't really watch basketball, to be honest. I can't say.
I think it's just fine, you know. If they were winning the game, he was trying something different, whatever. You know, if the Bilbao players cared so much about it, they shouldn't be losing 3-1. You know, I think it's part and parcel. I remember a moment Ronaldo did that against Millwall in the FA Cup and got absolutely bollocked by Ryan Giggs and, you know, chilled out after that. But, you know, it is gamesmanship. It's probably a little bit of disrespect. But, you know, if you can do it, you can do it. We'd love to see it.
I know if I was playing five-a-side and I was losing, I don't know, 5-0 or something, and someone tried to flick over my head, I would get quite annoyed. But I don't know.
You get annoyed, but then that's your skill, Adam, is then to contain that, channel it, and say, right, now how can I do better?
Yeah, but I'd sort of say the guy's taking the piss, isn't he? He's trying to be a bit, you know. There's no need for it, you know. You're 5-0 up. Let's just relax, have some.
And I don't think you react at that moment. You react in the next tackle that you have, or the next, like, you know, sort of moment that you come together on the pitch. Is then that's when you react.
That's when
then you make that impact.
That's when
you
should. That's where I show what I can do. You know,
exactly.
Smash someone off the ball. James Lee too said, "Will Theo Walcott be at Arsenal next season?" I would suggest yes. I think maybe before the FA Cup final, his future might have been a little bit more iffy, but I think he sort of showed what he can do there, and I think the fans would want him to stay as well at Arsenal. Do you think he's going to leave, Lawrence?
Ask Dave first, and then come back.
Fair enough. Dave, what do you reckon?
I think he's going to stay. I think he likes being, you know, around Arsenal and that type of thing. He fits into the squad. He's a different option to Giroud. You know, he runs in behind. He would have been really good this season when essentially Arsenal did lack a little bit. Was it the start of the campaign? Maybe Walcott could have come in then, you know, really helped the likes of Alexis Sanchez sort of come into the Premier League. What's going to be interesting is their sort of development next season, Sanchez and Walcott. Sanchez is, you know, he goes under the radar a bit in terms of his creativity and his ability on the ball to play a pass, you know, a through ball. I think he's completed more through balls than any other Arsenal player this season. And I think that's something that could go very well with the likes of Theo Walcott, you know, absolutely rapid. And he's starting to learn how to finish as well.
Lawrence, what are you thinking? You've had your time now to think about it.
Well, I mean, Dave's covered put that very well. I still think that it comes with the mercurial factor for this player. I also think that it comes along with the idea that it's hard to see another fit when there already seems to be a great fit right in front of you. And it, for some extent, that's why we're paid to earn our money, is to see other situations. I think I'd like to see him in another situation, but there's a very comfortable place where everyone is right now. And I just wonder if you leave that comfort zone, does it get better or does it get worse? I wonder if it actually gets better, under someone else he flourishes.
Richard B, LFC, said, who is the best at football out of the three of you? I don't think I've ever seen Dave play football. Am I wrong in saying that? I've played football with Lawrence before.
No, yeah? You've never played football with me.
Lawrence, have you played football with Dave?
No. I've got to admit, I did play football with a group of bloggers. They probably won't resent me saying this. In a charity, not a charity.
Were you the best?
No, not by a long way. But we were no, you know, when you kind of turn up and you think, right, you've written all these articles, you've said all these things. Now prove it on the, the hell, you can't even move your feet. Dave's sitting a good game at centre-half today. I'm wondering about that.
Yeah.
I'm a very, like, when I play football, it's like, you know, get it out or deal with it. I don't have much composure on the ball, but if I see a clearance, an opportunity to get that ball out, bang on it, smash it out, and that's what I try and do, command, leader, that type of thing. So I'm not the best footballer, but I'm good to have your team, so I don't think it's me.
Listen, next Thursday, Regent's Park, I think us three should go down.
I wish I could.
The week after. One of these Thursdays. We can finally answer Richard's question there once we all get on the pitch together.
Should we film that? Should we make that the next front three video?
Oh, yeah. Why not? Right. We let the audience judge who's the best, you see. And I'll edit it so I can make myself look really good.
Yeah, just like I edited you to make you look good. Time you scored a goal in front of Ian Wright.
Mate, what a goal as well.
It's a good finish. Yeah.
Next question, aka Juice26 says, is Hazard world class? I think he's just overhyped by the media. What do you think, Lawrence? World class?
I did a preview the other day with Andy Brassel for Wales, Belgium. That turned out well. Brassel made a really good point, which was that sometimes Hazard goes into gala mode, which is like, you know, just kind of just do whatever I want, you know. And I think Mourinho likes that arrogance, but at the same time it's something he has to harness. And they've not quite found that balance yet. But he's in the process of finding that. You know, you would have said similar about Ronaldo a couple of years ago. It's that, you know, people say, oh, he's lazy or all this, or, you know, he takes too many shots or he does too many of these things. And he's focused his game over time. And I just think his Hazard, you know, we're not always seeing someone in their finished form. I think it's a...
Yeah, of course.
It's a process. And we're probably seeing someone who's on the scale of world class because of his technical ability, because of the teams he plays in.
Is that a 23?
23, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this in that sense, that leaves him, you know, parallel with the likes of... he's 24, leaves him parallel with the likes of Ronaldo at this point.
Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like Eden Hazard has purple patches. So I feel like he's not...
I'm going to say completely no. He's definitely world-class. He's not overhyped. He's the best player in the Premier League. The stats just back it up here. I'm going to go into stat mode, right? Okay. So he scored the most goals from midfield. In the Premier League, he's created the most chances, he's completed the most take-ons, and he's completed the most passes in the final third. This season for Eden Hazard's where he really comes as, you know, he is this player now, he's this mercurial player that's brilliant, that gets on the ball, that creates things, that makes things happen. You look at his stats, they're very Lionel Messi-like, which is strange. You look at his passing stats, they're very Messi-like. Take-on stats, very Messi-like. Chances created, very Messi-like. The only stat that he needs to work on is his goals. You know, if he starts getting to that level of, you know, the 40-goal mark, the 30-goal mark, the 20-goal mark, that's when we're like, yes, he's up to the Messi and Ronaldo standard. At the moment, he's not, but 100% he's world-class. You're saying a world-class player, and you're not including Hazard. I think that's a bit of a mistake. I think that he's definitely, definitely world-class.
There you go. There you have it. Next question. Finbar McMahon said, greatest centre-back partnerships ever? Which is a pretty Hansen broad Lawrence. Question.
Vidic, Ferdinand,
King Dawson, you know.
who's been at Stam? Who's not alongside Jaap Stam at United?
Is it Ronnie Johnson?
Oh, okay, so not that.
Immediately but, discounted.
Nesta Maldini.
Yeah, that's got to be there.
Vidic Ferdinand, Dave? I thought you would have...
Yeah, definitely. I think Vidic Ferdinand's definitely up there. Whilst we were chatting there, I just jotted some down. You know, Vidic Ferdinand's obviously one. PK Puyol at that massive, you know, the Barcelona team. PK Mascherano was raving about that before. Maldini Nesta, definitely Loz, 100%. Jerome Boateng and Matt Hummels from the World Cup, I think they were phenomenal. Wow. And then my last one, PK and Sergio Ramos for Spain. I think they're definitely the greatest pairings.
I think that's good, but I kind of want to see it all over. I want to see it for a whole season, you know. I want to see, I'm trying to think of who I want to see do it now. I mean, that's why I like Maldini and Nesta, is that, you know, they were great for a very long time as a pair.
What have you got?
If you want to go even further back, you'd probably say De Boer and someone else, maybe. Could you say Javier Honcho? Great combination at the time.
Not the greatest, pal.
Tony Adams, Martin Keown.
Yeah, definitely worth a shout. Terry Carvalho, I forgot how to say his name.
Here's a question. What about the worst ever Premier League partnership?
Tell you what, Phil Jones and Chris Smalling, sometimes they have moments of being the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was the guy that Newcastle signed from Rangers? He was with he was with Titus Bramble at the back. He was like famously one of the worst flops. He was like French. Boomsong, is that his name?
Boomsong, oh, yes. Boomsong was bad, yeah.
It's like him and Titus Bramble, you know. Rock solid.
He was a good footballer, to be fair to him.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he just didn't have the best time of it up on old Tyneside, but not a lot of players do. Next question is, Tottenham have had a bad defence this season. Who should they sign for more stability? They've already signed a guy called Kevin Wimmer? Yeah.
Do
you want to pronounce it in German? And apparently they're interested in Mark Bartra as well.
Well, apparently everyone's interested in Mark Bartra. But for the price that he's being billed at.
Which is
about 9 million, right?
I think that's pretty...
Rising. 9 million rising.
That's not too bad. It's not too excessive. But I think, the defence was a weakness for Spurs last season. It's one of the areas that needs strengthening. Pretty much every position needs strengthening on the field. But I think Wimmer's a good one. I think if we get someone like Bartra, a young, sort of promising centre-back in, I think, you know, we'll be sorted then. Just as long as we get rid of Younes Kabul, who was inexplicably made club captain last season. And then
Can I throw one player out here right now? Okay, it might not happen. Come on.
Scouts are listening, so you may as well.
Jose Font. Imagine him, if Tottenham could get Jose Font, they've got a leader, they would be able to get Premier League player.
But you'd almost say Southampton are at a similar... Going into next season, you'd say they're at a similar level now of what their aims are for next season. So I wonder if Font would jump ship to Spurs. I don't know. It probably doesn't look as appealing as it once did. next question is James Holloran, who says... Best signing of the window so far, even though the window hasn't technically opened. Who's been the best signing, do you think?
Well, it's hard to say, isn't it?
You're just judging it. You obviously can't judge by what they've how they performed at their new clubs. But I mean, you know, James Milner on a free transfer, you've got to say that's a very good deal for Liverpool. Who else has been flying about?
Hold on. There ain't no Memphis Depay, though. Come on, that's the signing of the window.
That's exactly what I was thinking. But I was just trying to think, is there anything better than Depay? Probably not, you know. Memphis is, you know, they're walking in Memphis is the best.
Yeah, seeing as he was, you know, there were so many clubs chasing him, and then for Man United to just do their business early. He wasn't, how much was the final price last week?
I think it's around 30 million euros, maybe. So like 25 to 27 million.
It's expensive, but it's not excessively so.
No.
On a similar topic, Robert S. Sweet says, which player will have the highest transfer fee this summer? So it looks like David De Gea is going to Real Madrid, but seeing as his contract's sort of running down, the fee's probably not going to be so high. You're looking at Paul Pogba, who's always linked for move. Yeah. He's probably someone who's going to, you know, command a big fee. Raheem Sterling, we found out last week that Manchester City made a £30 million bid, which Liverpool rejected, so he's going to cost around £50 million, £60 million probably if he does move.
40?
Yeah, maybe. I think Liverpool are going to hold out for the big bucks. But I mean, what do you guys think? Who's going to
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Be the number one. I think maybe we might see Pogba move towards the end. As we get towards the end of the window, I think that's going to keep going. That's going to be this summer's saga, if you will. And someone's going to fork out the big money, Barcelona, City, or otherwise.
I don't know if it would happen, but I think players that you're looking at there, you know, if Kevin De Bruyne moves, that's going to be an absolute fortune. If Gareth Bale leaves Real Madrid, you know, Eden Hazard leaves Chelsea, they are really, you know, that's going to cost you an absolute arm and leg.
I can see De Bruyne leaving. I can't see Bale and Hazard going anywhere. But I mean, De Bruyne, what sort of fees are they talking about in the press?
I think it's 45 million euros.
I think Sterling's going to eclipse that, and at least. So either him or Pogba is going to be the big ones, I reckon.
An interesting one could be if Ross Barkley does leave Everton. I think he probably needs a little bit of new grass to play on in a way. He could be the man.
Yeah, there was the stories not too long ago, a couple of months back, that City are in for him, seeing as he's English, he's young, you know, and he might be easier to prize away from Everton than Sterling would be from Liverpool. But I mean, we'll see. The next question is from Adnan Qureshi, my good old Facebook friend. He added me on Facebook.
Do like him. He seems like a nice guy.
Oh, yeah. He's always asking the questions. He's a devoted listener. He says, who can topple this Barcelona side? So I assume we're looking to next season.
Wales, mate.
You think anyone... Are you thinking any of the other big European teams this season are going to strengthen enough to challenge them for like European honours next season?
Wait till you come up against the wall that is Rafa Benitez's Madrid team.
That is going to be interesting to see.
That's very interesting.
I don't know. I feel like, with those front three there, it was obviously in the peak of their powers. I think, you know, you're going to see Barcelona dominate for the next couple of years, really. I can't quite see... You know, obviously, Barcelona signed Luis Suarez last season, one of the best players in the world. He's improved their side. He's improved their attacking line so much. I can't see another team making a signing like that who's going to have such an impact going into next season.
No, but then you're thinking of that as in someone's going to go toe-to-toe. I'm thinking of it as more as who's going to put a stopper to their fun, you know? And that's why I think, you know, Benitez or a Mourinho is going to sort of come up against them and tactically say, go on then, go through us, and then counter on them.
What about next season, Champions League final, again, Juventus versus Barcelona? You know, Allegri's just going to get stronger. You know, they've already signed Dybala. Tevez looks like he's going to stay. You know, they're probably going to get the likes of Oscar in, or someone, a really good attacking midfielder. If they sell Pogba, they're going to get a shed load of cash for that. They can re-spend on the side. So for me, potentially it might be Juventus.
You know, you're saying, Lawrence, then about is who's going to stop their fun. Do you think anyone can? So are you saying to me, like, in, you know, the last season, all the teams that played Barcelona, especially from January onwards when they're in such incredible form, it was the other teams almost making mistakes. You're saying they didn't tactically do enough to stop that front three? Or is the front three just too good and there is no way to stop them when they're firing on all cylinders?
Again, it's all based on a system, but the system does play to their strengths, which, really fits in with Adidas's marketing campaign, which is to cause chaos in the other back line. But there are defenders out there that are intelligent. That's maybe why I think, you know, will Benitez be able to stop them with this Madrid team? Because does he have a centre-back pairing intelligent and competent enough to be able to, stop those guys? We also have to remember how close this Barcelona... How many points were they off Real Madrid in second place in the end? Just two. That's not a ridiculous difference. They both lost a relatively similar number of games. And the two games that, Real Madrid lost were the ones that lost them the league, essentially.
Interesting.
And so I'm wondering whether, you know, and this is the problem is, you know, if Benitez can keep mentality within the squad, which maybe some people feel has eroded most of his title challenges as a manager, then you'd say he's got somewhat of a good chance of mounting a title bid against them. And, you know, I'm also just thinking, you know, what's he learned as a manager while he's not been in that league? And I think a lot of people aren't giving him the credit as a manager that he deserves because maybe they don't like him the way he's portrayed as a person. They take away from his own, you know, footballing accolades.
Yeah, I feel like, obviously, I don't watch a lot of Serie A, so I can't give you an in-depth discussion of how he got on at Napoli.
But Napoli side is incredibly politicised.
Yeah.
And had a lot of, you know... Let's not put Napoli and Real Madrid in the same bracket of, you know, quality of player there. They've got great quality players, but they also come from a different mentality, a different standpoint. This is Real Madrid we're talking about here.
It's true. It's very true. So listen, last question, very serious question from Alejo AFC 15. He says, who has the best hair? Out of us three.
Out of us three? Yeah. I'm going to say you, Adam. You have a really clean cut. Although, thanks, you know what? Mate. Dave looks great on the full-time Devil previews right now.
Oh, yeah?
Dave, your hair is fantastic right now. I'm going to say it's between you two.
Well, let me just check out this full-time Devil's preview and let me give you the verdict.
I'd argue that my hair is too volatile. Oops. You know, some days it has bad days, some days it has good days. So I don't think it could be me. For consistency, it's probably got to be Adam, hasn't it?
Because he's like, mate, I'll take the crown.
Dave, what I need to know is how many successful take-ons of your hair do you have a week?
Oh my God, it's loads. You're probably looking at two a day.
Really? Wow. Okay. And then Adam has this consistent. Yeah, if Adam was uglier, you'd say he looked like a Lego man, but he isn't. So let's say Adam for best hair on the podcast. Although in real life, I've got to admit, you know, mine's more striking.
It is quite striking.
Yeah, it is.
You got a comment.
Good Barnett, to be fair, mate.
Yeah, actually looks pretty good, Dave. In the latest video, I've got to say you've had a fresh trim.
Oh, cheers, yes. Pal.
It's looking slick.
You've been to your barber, Dave.
Let's share the award between the three
of us. Dave did it for the bloody date, didn't he? Bloody hell, Dave. You don't do anything for the media nowadays. You do it for the bloody women.
Oh, it all makes sense now. So listen, that is all the questions we've got time for this week. Some really good questions there. Thank you very much for sending them in on Twitter. If you want your question answered for next week, then send it to us at the front three with the number three, not the word, and we will answer it next week. So listen, we're going to move on to a little bit of transfer news before we move on to the talking points. Transfer news. We mentioned it briefly there. Sterling to City. City made a £30 million bid last week, rejected by Liverpool, who are apparently looking for closer to £50 million. Do you think this deal is inevitable, or are you bored of it now and you just want it to be over and done with?
Is it inevitable?
Inevitable.
Are Liverpool trying to price someone out of the camp? You know, what's Liverpool's game plan here? Because if they wait another season, his price will go down.
I think
because he's only got 1 year left on his contract.
I think they're willing to sell him, but they just want to get as much as out of it as possible. I think 30 million, it's not quite enough to convince them that it's worth. You know, I mean, I reckon they. Think
yeah,
they can get
I think 50. Yeah, because I still feel like they could. They feel like they could get 20 next year or 25 next
year.
Yeah.
So, the other transfer news today, well, this week was Sky Sports claiming that Petr Cech had talks on Monday about his future at Chelsea, with the goalkeeper apparently interested in a move to Arsenal. That's what we're hearing a lot. So it'd be interesting to see if that comes up. Mark Bartra, which we mentioned earlier. Tottenham have apparently made an inquiry. He's got an £8.7 million release clause. Apparently a lot of other clubs are in for him. One other interesting one this week that I heard was Podolski to Everton. That was a Daily Star. What do you reckon to that one? Could be a good signing for Everton?
No.
Let's put it this way. It would be a signing for Everton.
Yeah. Okay. That's one way of putting it.
He was pretty rubbish for Inter Milan in the second half of the season. He was awful. He scored like two or three goals in like 19 appearances. I think he's maybe done for him.
Everton, though, do have a history of making fairly immobile strikers look quite good. Duncan Ferguson, although he was quite mobile. But, I mean, you know what I'm saying.
Okay.
He's the Polish-German Duncan Ferguson.
Yeah, Polish-German. Nice. The other news is this Falcao to Chelsea. rumour. It's ramping up. Apparently they've agreed terms with the player and now they're trying to sort out. They want him on loan from Monaco, who want to sell him. So that's the sort of the stumbling block there. But I mean, Dave, is this a good move for Chelsea, for Falcao? I mean, were you sad to see him go at the end of last season from Manchester United? Do you think you just never quite, Louis van Gaal can get the best out of him? Or
I think it's a good move for Man United to let him go. He didn't work. Going to Chelsea, you know, he's probably going to be behind Diego Costa, but he probably will play a bit. You know, Diego Costa's been injured quite a lot, so he probably would be a good player. He's probably going to score more goals than he did this season because Mourinho can get, you know, the best out of these players, you know, make them the world beaters they once were. But it's an interesting signing. You know, the likes of, you know, Patrick Bamford in the Chelsea, you know, played for Middlesbrough this season, was really good. You know, got Solanke that's coming through. I think it's a wrong move for Chelsea as a football club to bring the young players through. But then again, it's a Mourinho signing. We're going to have one more year of this Radamel Falcao score from goal and win the league. But I think it's an all right deal. Not the best deal, but not the worst.
What do you think about the rumours going around that Manchester United are looking to sign Jasper Cillessen, the Ajax goalkeeper, as a replacement for David De Gea, who still hasn't been confirmed in any way that he's off to Madrid, but everyone seems to have sort of assumed that it's happening sooner rather than later.
He's definitely not my favourite goalkeeper in world football. He was all right at the World Cup. You know, good ball-playing goalkeeper. You know, he's taught well. He's 26. But is he really De Gea level? Is he anywhere near De Gea? Definitely not, in my opinion.
Not many goalkeepers are, to be fair.
True, but I think that with this next signing of a goalkeeper, we've got to get someone, you know, we've got to go for Peter Cech. We've got to go for, you know, someone like maybe Jan Sommer, I mentioned him before. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got to go for a solid keeper. We can't go for a keeper that's played in their Eredivisie, that's all right, that, you know, is not anywhere near that world-class level. Or, you know, he's not a young goalkeeper looking to make his name in the game. He's around that age where it's kind of, you know what you're going to get from him. He's not really going to change. So I think it's got to be a big signing, really.
Okay, fair play. Lawrence, what are your thoughts on Liverpool apparently coming back in for Nathaniel Clyne? So sadly, Liverpool didn't renew Glenn Johnson's contract last season.
Very sadly. Goodbye, sweet prince.
Yeah, indeed. Big gap at right back to fill. Do you think Nathaniel Clyne's the man to do it for about $15
million? Seems like a lot of money again to pay for a right back. But if they're looking to fill that quota, then sure, go for it. He's good. I wonder whether Liverpool are overpaying a lot for players right now because of their nationality.
I would rather paid a lot for James Milner and Danny Ings, of course.
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, do Liverpool have someone else they could bring in there? You know, do they have, you know, could they look at the players that they have youth wise? I mean, you know, they bought Moreno in to go on the other side of that. Ilori, I believe was his name, went away.
Yeah.
And hasn't impressed to the extent that you want him to. Could they push another centre-back out there? But then that doesn't necessarily fit the requirements. So they want someone who can attack there. He's young. He's someone who will probably play for a number of years. So, you know, right now it looks like an educated idea, but it's not the money ball that maybe we want to see Liverpool doing. And it just stinks of there are probably other areas that need to be addressed. But then it was a huge problem for Liverpool last year that they were very exposed because it was either Markovic or Johnson, and neither of them looked particularly defensively solid, which gave people a direct run at Skrtel. So maybe Liverpool need to look at maybe the centre-back pairing of Skrtel as well back in there. That whole back line, basically they need to look at the structure that fits that best. Will Nathaniel Clyne fit into that? Most probably. But does it leave Liverpool exposed? Possibly so. So if you're looking at that and you're going to spend $15 million on your right back, maybe you need to be looking at $25 for a central midfielder. But then, you know, we've looked at the system and whether Henderson, Milner, those guys just ahead can combine in some way to sit back and, you know, whether Brendan Rodgers chooses to overlook the importance of defensive midfield, which will probably help any right back that comes in, is another factor. These are all the thing is with Liverpool, these are great signings, but Milner is a good signing, and so is Ings, but they need to come in a context of better signings around them, and so far those better signings haven't come.
Well, speaking of which, how happy would you be if the rumoured move for Carlos Tevez comes off? I can't see it happening myself, but that's
I'd be
rumor.
Eight happy.
You'd be eight happy out of 10? Yeah. Or
I don't know,
20?
Mate. I'd be eight.
Okay.
I'd be Steven Gerrard happy.
Wow.
Which means
he always looks quite miserable.
I was going to say that probably misrepresents my happiness.
Yeah.
The So I'd be very happy with a Carlos Tevez signing. Cool. But even then, you say that probably represents the upper echelons of what Liverpool are going for, doesn't it?
Yeah, I can't see that in myself. But apparently there are
also probably other preferable teams, and you also think Liverpool want to build for the long term, and Carlos Tevez is not long term. He'll be going back to South America at some point. Mm. He very often agitates for a move, and if he's not happy at Juve, who are in the Champions League, winning very close to a treble last year, then, you know, what else is there?
Dave, what have you got on Firmino, the Hoffenheim?
It's actually Firmino. He's not got an eight.
Sorry, this is like when I said the MLS last week, isn't it? So sorry, Firmino, the Hoffenheim forward. Dave, a lot of talk about Manchester United being in for him.
He's a good player. Whenever we've seen him play for Hoffenheim this season, I remember one game in the German Cup against Borussia Dortmund. He scored a fantastic chip. He's a player that will get you goals, will get you assists. I think no other midfielder in the Bundesliga has been involved in more goals than him over the past 2 years. I think he's been involved in 44 goals. So he's a very, very good player. He's composed. He's got a good trick in him. He's quite good on the counter-attack as well, something that United have lacked this season. So, he's a good player. He likes to take people on. He likes to beat his man with the ball at his feet. He's just an attacker that's quite nice. And I'm looking forward to watch him a bit more in the Copa America, to be quite honest. Obviously, he didn't start the opening game, but I reckon he'll come in. And yeah, it's an exciting signing for Man United. A Brazilian lad coming to Man United. It's like the Ronaldinho one that never went through. It's just going to be good. It's going to be fun. Brazilians are always fun to watch.
Speaking of Brazilians, the last bit of transfer news is that Barcelona striker Neymar is set to extend his contract at the Nou Camp until 2020. He's going to earn a tidy €12 million a year with a new buyout clause of it's pretty big, €250 million apparently is buyout clause now. Do you think he's earned that, Lawrence, this season?
One day that won't seem like a very ridiculous buyout clause, will it?
Yeah. Do you reckon one day someone's going to get bought for €250 million? Euros, that's going to happen.
If the bubble doesn't burst, then yes, Adam.
Oh, I think the bubble will
burst. The bubble will probably burst just as someone spends $250 million on it. So, buyout clauses don't really mean very much. They basically mean, look, he's not going to get bought.
Yes.
Has he earned it? I don't care.
Excellent answer. And that brings an end to
Wait a minute. I've got some transfer news.
Oh, go on. Is this something you've heard, or is this just,
No, I mean, this is more transfers of electronic data to your said gaming console, Adam. The excitement this year of FIFA is launching literally at the time that we record this podcast.
Yes, come on.
E3, they're screening the brand new FIFA 16 trailer, which features another Brazilian. You basically have Pelé in said trailer. So whilst everyone else is being painted by a political brush, Pelé decides to step away from those lights. There is apparently a difference that basically their line this year is play beautiful, which is fair enough. I think that's rather fantastic. That basically they have a new defensive system. They have something called defensive agility. You can defend as a unit, which you'd argue has not happened very much in the previous FIFAs sometimes. And they're just basically looking at the fundamentals of apparently what is going on. It does seem like a lot of cliche, but I would be interested to hear what people think about the difference in FIFA. I've seen the Pro Evo trailer. It looks awful.
Yeah, it didn't look great, did it?
No, it looked like they'd literally just invented the game.
I'm a big FIFA guy, but I can't. I'm watching the trailer as we speak, Lawrence, and it just looks the same as the last games.
Yeah, but you've got to admit, Adam, it's not to do with the look. If we'd learned anything,
the mechanics of it, the animations, and it doesn't look any different. You know what I mean? It just looks like the same game as Swap.
I don't really like this FIFA right now. But when I say I don't like it, I mean, I like it. It's obviously a good game, but it's just maybe I find it different to the older games that I liked in a different way.
I'm a big fan of the way they've put women's national teams in the game. I'm not a big fan of the jokes that are going around on Twitter. Have you seen the jokes?
What jokes?
The uninspired kitchen jokes and the like, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, but, everyone, you can't really make excuses for those. You just have to, in fact, you don't ignore it. You engage with it. Time to go away.
I'll tell you, I'm happy they've got Harry Kane's face in FIFA 16 by the looks of it. So that's big news. Okay, so let's move on to the talking points to wrap it all up. Dave, you're up first. What do you want to talk about this week? What's your talking point?
I think this week is the Copa America. And it's... I was so excited pre-tournament, but it's really just not got going yet. You know, the two teams we mentioned to be probably favourites, you know, Brazil and Argentina, both of them had a very poor opening game. Argentina really took control of their game. They were 2-0 up in the first half, and they really had it slip. They were exposed on the counter-attack. They were throwing too many men forward when they were winning. The blend isn't right. I think that Tevez has got to come in there. Aguero's got to go out. And then Brazil yesterday was quite boring, and all we get from that is a Neymar, you know, reel of him doing skills and him being pretty awesome. But if you actually watch the game, it was a bit different. I think both Tata Martino and Dunga have massive questions to answer. I think they're both set up in a pretty poor way. Argentina had no real balance, had no real, you know, workhorse in their side. You know, Benega looked pretty good, Messi looked all right. But I don't think there's, you know, the Tevez aspect of it. He really needs to come in, he really needs to be that force. I just don't think the back four's, you know, as good with, you know, they're leaving the centre-backs too exposed on the counter-attack. And then you go to Brazil. You know, they were really boring. They looked quite good in the transition, but when they had the ball in the opposition's half, they were just awful. Fernandinho and Elise were just awful. You know, Neymar was trying too much. He was trying to beat everyone. And I just think there's a lot of big questions. Or the likes of Chile, the likes of, you know, Uruguay might come out this tournament as champions.
Do you think it's who settles quicker then? Because at the moment, I was saying on another thing today, it looks like, basically, it looks like the FA Cup a little bit. Some of these teams playing up and some people maybe not realising the level they're playing. And maybe that's Brazil and Argentina so far.
Definitely. And I think that they need to get the selection right. You know, Dunga, Diego Tardelli, I don't understand why he's in the squad. I don't understand why he started. I think he's absolutely awful. I think Neymar would work better on the left-hand side. I think Firmino should come in centrally. Potentially having a really fluid two of maybe Firmino and Willian as the two strikers, and then Neymar coming in, you know, from the left-hand side, and potentially Douglas Costa from the other. I just think the system is completely all wrong right now. And Dunga's got to address that. It really has.
Interesting, very interesting. Yeah. How long's it? When's the Copa America wrapping up? When's the final?
The final of the Copa America. I think obviously it's just kicked off pretty much. We're having our opening group game.
Yeah.
So I think the final will be around the end of this month.
It's weird. I didn't realise.
Is it the 4th of July?
Yes, the 4th of July. Not the end of this month. The start of the next month. Cheers, Lawrence. But it's going to be.
No worries.
I think it's really going to start to get hot when we get to the, you know, the semi-finals. That's when everyone's got to get engaged. Everyone's got to start watching it.
It's a shame. A bold prediction there from Dave.
It's going to get hot. Good when the shitty teams are gone. Yes, Dave.
It's a shame that it's on the same time as the Women's World Cup and the Euro Under 21s.
It's also a shame.
And they're all on at the same time.
Although, and the Gold Cup.
Yeah.
Another rant.
There you go.
Why is it not on the telly? Why is it not on the telly? Why am I searching the internet for, like, YouTube channels or dodgy streams? Why is it not on Style BT?
What are you doing in your own time, Dave?
It's just something, isn't it?
It is.
It's not Premier Sports or something. Dave, one tab on RedTube, the other tab.
That's,
I'm a committed
that's
football fan.
Spurious lies and slander there, Lawrence. So let's come to a talking point and quickly move away from that. And what do you want to talk about this week, Lawrence?
What am I going to talk about? The quotes from Carlos Tevez. Carlos Tevez is obviously back in the Argentina squad, but there are a lot of people talking about the significance of this player, the talismanic-esque player, if that's what you want to call it, being part of this squad. And the fact that just a few years ago, he fell out of love with the game, wanted to go play golf for a little while, wanted to get away from City. And what I guess I thought about that, because I've been thinking a lot about the thought process of how people work this week, and, you know, whether you can, basically what makes a player world-class, in inverted commas, on a consistent basis. And I'd love to hear what other people think about this in the comments, but how you can consistently cultivate a mentality which allows you to not only win things, be motivated to win things, and consistently play at a high level and keep your body at a very high level. I think it's harder than a lot of people probably think, especially when you're younger. You know, you believe you're somewhat invincible. You have somewhat, you know, you have this physical prowess that maybe you think comes naturally. But then when players, you know, even Ronaldo, now he's hitting 30, it's going to be a different kind of maintenance program that he keeps. And I think it's understanding that It's really interesting. I'd love to, you know, especially when it comes to transfers and things, we tend to project our own thoughts onto football players who probably see it from a very different and personal point of view. And what I'd urge people to think about here would be, you know, if you've got a player leaving, don't just think, try to take yourself out of your own experience and put it in someone else's, and you'll probably get a much richer, deeper experience out of what you see footballing wise. And maybe you'll get some different lessons. I don't know.
I'm always interested, and I think it's a good point you're saying about the mental aspect of it. Yeah. You know, when teams win like three championships in a row or whatever, and you know, we automatically assume, oh, they're just amazing, they can keep it going. But like you say, it's that mental aspect. They don't have the same motivation after winning 3 years in a row or whatever to continue it on. And I think that's why you see players like Messi and Ronaldo, they sort of have these peaks and troughs almost. So you saw Messi won four Ballon d'Ors in a row, no fault of his own, but the motivation, that, you know, will to win was probably not as strong as it was after he's won all those awards. Ronaldo comes back 2 years in a row, wins them. Now, you know, Messi, who had a poor season last year, you're seeing this year that determination, that hunger has come back. So it's interesting to look at that sort of mental aspect of it. Do you know what I mean?
But I think that's what makes it. And I think that's sometimes why, you know, I would shy away from calling Messi incredible every year. Obviously, his achievements are great. But I do think, and this was a great tweet I saw not long ago, I think it was Moussa Kwongo said, Messi is great, not because he does great things, but because he defies what you necessarily think of as great and almost creates a different context for that. And, you know, there are great players in the past that have done that. Michael Jordan, Pele, probably Maradona, people who thought outside of the constrictions of that. And I guess that now we have an incredible system and a lot of different views. And we see that kind of clashing every day in the comments below our podcast and the comments below every podcast out there, a YouTube channel, all those kind of things. And a lot of people now are encouraged to think from very limited perspectives of, you know, what does it mean for your FIFA squad? What does it mean for your team? All those kind of things. And sometimes they're not encouraged to think outside of maybe the normal parameters or cliche parameters of football. But when it comes to these things, we've got more tools than we've ever had before that we can now. And, you know, Dave's part of that with, you know, statistics and those kind of things. But I'd just love to know how that affects the players themselves and how players motivate and continually sort of see their own lives. Because even with Sterling, you sort of, you look at him and people are sort of like, well, he's being selfish or whatever it is. That in itself is a brilliant microcosm for basically the way that people project their own thoughts and feelings onto people they don't even know on a daily basis. And I guess there's just a lot of lesson in that. You know?
The classic one from last season was when Raheem Sterling was tired. Do you remember that whole thing?
Yeah.
And everyone was like, how can he be tired? He gets paid 200 grand a week, as if that would have an impact upon his physical condition. You know, people get tired if you're running around 7 days a week or whatever. It does affect you, do you know what I mean? But whereas, like you're saying, people...
It's all relative. You know, you can't, like, there are probably people who are starving in the world who said, how can you be tired? You know, how could you be tired? You just record a podcast, you know, like once or twice a week.
Exactly,
and you claim to be tired, Adam.
I am quite
tired. What's wrong with you?
Terrible, isn't it?
So selfish.
I know. I'm sorry, everyone. So listen, my talking point is far less interesting, I'm afraid to say. But I just wanted to know what you thought. In the game on the weekend, we saw potentially one of the best England goals. Also, Gary Lineker seems to think he's in the top 10 ever. Jack Wilshere's second goal is a lovely little flick from Lallana, I think, which set Wilshere up. Mm-hmm. And he absolutely banged it into the top left corner. What amazing finish. So I wanted to know, what is the best ever England goal that you've seen or that you know, remember seeing? So for me, it was Paul Gascoigne v Scotland back in Euro 96. David Seaman, watching it again, it's a lot less refined than I thought it was. David Seaman boots it up the pitch. There's a knockdown header. someone knocked it out. But yeah, there's five touches in all, including Gazza's one flick over Colin Hendry and one to, you know, smash it in the corner. So it's five touches. But I still think that was the best. That's one of the best goals I've seen in terms of the quality, but also how happy you were after it went in. So I'm wondering if there's anything like that you've seen England score.
Michael Owen against Argentina.
The classic one where he burst onto the scene.
Yeah.
David Beckham's free kick.
Against Greece.
Yeah, that was a bit of a banger. That was a great goal as well. Ah, it's tough, isn't it?
Trying to think of other ones.
There was one that was just dead, like memorable for me. I think, was it Emil Heskey or someone that scored the fifth goal against Germany in that game where we just hammered them? It was just sort of jumps out to me that, you know, it was a pretty standard goal, but 5-0 against Germany.
That was a big game for things. People were going mental when we won that one. It wasn't even a qualifier or anything, was it? Was it a friendly?
I think it was a friendly, yeah.
Yeah.
My God. There you go. We took it a little bit far, that one.
There's got to be some other ones as well, though. I'm still trying to think. I mean, I'd love to see suggestions in the comments. Jack Wilson's obviously...
Yeah, the thing was, I was thinking England don't usually score amazing goals. We score, you know, decent goals. But every now and then, you know, we have these, you know, these incredible net rippers. Like Jack.
What about that one? There's one that Joe Cole scored a few years ago.
Oh, against Sweden.
Oh, yeah.
Is it Sweden?
The World Cup.
I think it was Sweden.
Yeah. It was the volley, the corner. It got knocked out to him. He was on the edge of the box. One touch, I think, and then he one touch to control it. One touch to smash it in. That was incredible, actually. Now you come to think of it. Actually, England have scored some pretty good goals. They have scored.
You know, there have been some pretty talented players to that. I mean, if you go back, really go back in the day, and I think I only really remember this because I'm a Liverpool fan, but John Barnes scored some cracking goals for England.
John Barnes. See, this is what I'm saying. This is before my time. I was thinking, like, oh, you know, when I was young, you know, what was the best goal I ever scored?
Well, Shearer, Lineker, Platt.
Well, oh, yeah. The one against Holland was pretty good. That's Euro 96 as well, wasn't it?
That was just about when I was beginning to remember goals.
Exactly. So 96, how old was I?
My name's John Barnes. When I score a goal, the crowd goes, bananas.
I was 8 when Euro 96 was on. And that was the one when all those goals were flying in. Sheringham and Shearer, the SAS up front. Gascoigne. Oh, man. Those are the days, eh? Those are the days.
I broke my nose the day that Paul Gascoigne scored that goal.
Yeah. How'd you do that? Throw and punch you?
No, I ran into... A clash of heads, Adam.
Classic.
A memorable goal that never was. The Lampard goal in the last... Was it the World Cup?
Don't talk to me about it. That was a goal, wasn't it? It's what that won us the World
Cup. Yeah, it was actually a goal.
What about the... on a similar theme, it was just over a year ago today that, I don't know, you know, the opening game of the World Cup, Italy-England. Yeah. Do you remember when Sterling had that long shot couple of minutes? And then I was watching it in a pub and people went mental. People were, like, jumping up and down, like, hugging each other. And we didn't realise until a full minute later that it hadn't actually gone in. Everyone was going crazy. And I actually, smashed my glasses that night because of that. So thanks, Raheem, for not scoring. Anyway, listen.
50 mil.
There you go. Couldn't even get it in. Let's wrap it up there because we're over an hour mark now. So I think people have probably had enough of us. But thank you very much for listening once again to The Front Three. Thank you for all of your questions. You can get more info next week on Twitter at The Front Three. I won't actually be here next week because I'm going to be on holiday in sunny Barcelona, I'm afraid to say. So Lawrence and Dave are going to have to find someone to fill in for me. And I look forward to listening to it on Wednesday on the plane back. I can listen to The Front Three, which I'm sure is going to be a fantastic experience. But until then, Lawrence, where can the good people find more of your work?
Go to lozcast.com, LOZCAST, and see it all there.
And Dave, where can everyone else find you?
Get on Twitter, SquawkaDave, SQUAWKA Dave. Also, subscribe to my YouTube channel. It's in my bio. I'm doing a video this week, like a scout report on Kevin De Bruyne. So watch out for that.
I like that a lot. Do you remember when I suggested you did scout reports, Dave?
You did, you know, top stuff. And I think I'm going to compliment it.
You did. You now own 10% of my YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well played. Well played, lad.
You can find me on Twitter at Adam Boltwood. And you can also check out the new YouTube channel I'm helping to run called The Football Republic. Lawrence, you hosted a good video on there the other day. I thought it was a pretty top
channel,
notch.
Channel, yeah.
Pretty top notch. I think Lawrence and Dave are going to be on there in the future, so you can watch out for them there. But until next time, I won't see you next week, but these guys will see you next week. And thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, cheers, guys.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.